Mark Dernberger here with the DX Audio Service, and we are on our great tour of WLW Cincinnati with engineer Paul Jellison, who has been so good to take us through this entire plant. And we have gone from room to room, and one room is more fascinating than the other. Now he's about to open a fire door. And we have entered a room where giants once played.
Yes, this is the back room of the basement, and in that room was the 500 kilowatt modulation transformer. And as you can see, it's probably 11 feet tall, yep. Something like that.
It's oval. It's about 7 to 8 feet long and about, 5 feet wide?
Yes, like. And it weighs approximately 37,000 pounds.
So you're not going to move that just to make room for some?
No, we actually had two of these. We did remove one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, when we were cleaning up for PCB issues.
Right.
And we actually removed one. And we actually had to lower a forklift into the basement here. And the forklift actually drug the thing over, and we lifted it with a 20-ton crane.
Oh, my word.
And the crane operator running the cranes, when he got a hold of it, once he got done, he said that was the heaviest 20 tons he had ever lifted.
the most dense.
Yes.
Compact. Now, ahead of us is the generator. Is this the newer version?
Yes. This is a Cato Light. It's a 210 kilowatt generator. It runs basically the entire property. It runs even the house next door is on this generator. It puts out 480 volts, and will actually run this plant plus the FM transmitter that is out in the back.
And it's powered by a good old diesel.
It's got a Volvo six-cylinder diesel. Turbocharged, and I'm thinking the horsepower is in the range of 400, but don't hold me to that.
Now, you know that our listeners would love to hear you crank that thing.
Oh,
up.
I can certainly do that.
Let's do it.
All righty, here we go.
Watch it, folks. Started faster than my car.
Yeah, we keep it warm. We keep the block at about 100 degrees all the time.
Now, you exercise this every month or so under load?
This runs every Sunday. About 7 o'clock in the morning, it comes on and just runs. It doesn't take the load. And then we have our switching here so that if we're running one of our 50 kilowatt transmitters into the dummy load, that we can run it off of there. That way we don't pay tremendous peak charges.
Your demand meter doesn't
company.
Go up. Yeah.
Correct. Correct.
So there it is. It would not fit in my living room, this Cato Light. So this room now, which is big.
Yes.
Is 75 feet long at least, and maybe 30 or 40 feet wide, even longer than that.
I would say 70 feet probably, yeah. Well, you can see the pedestals for the pumps. And matter of fact, there's one of the pumps still back in the corner. And you can see the huge pipes in the back that actually brought the water in.
These pipes are going out, look like they're about 8 or 10 inches in diameter. My word.
Yes. And those pumps, you had a main and a back, or actually you had two complete systems. Those pumps pumped water out to the pond, the spray pond. And then there was another set of pumps, which we got rid of. For some reason, we had a lot of interest in them. They were 100% brass. And the scrap people, seemed to get in line to take those. But the brass pumps pump the distilled water inside, and the old iron pumps pump the water outside.
And the water was pumped out to the pond to go through the air to take the heat out of it.
Correct. Yes. It just sprayed out in the air. It was basically a water cooled system that just sprayed water in the air and relied on that action to cool the water.
And again, where the electrical connections are made, a lot of these old electrical switch panels were exposed, and so there's a big metal cage around this for safety purposes.
Yes, when I came here, when I first came here, this was all open. Matter of fact, and of course there was 2,400 volts was the primary voltage here.
And it is, in fact, active, is it not?
Yes, it is. Yeah. Absolutely. Oh. Yes, there.
So instead of the traditional big black phenolic switch that you labor to slap over to the side, here we have what are known as knife switches, and there's three ganged together on a piece of, I guess, Bakelite with a great big handle insulated, and you would lever that up and down or left and right to make or break the contact.
Yes, absolutely. And you'll notice there are actually, looks like about 6 or 7 switches. And what really gets interesting is you're throwing the switches in the middle. Your hand, and the reason I know this is because I just did this the other day. As you're throwing the switch, your hand comes perilously close to the fuse right above it, which is also hot. Here is some of the lead.
Oh, my word. He's lifting a lead cable that's about 2.5 inches in diameter and heavier than...
Just this end I'm lifting probably weighs 50 or 75 pounds.
All lead-covered.
All lead-covered, yeah.
Now, over here, I think we're in the high-voltage realm.
Yes, that's the 2,400 volts coming in from the substation.
All right, and it's not unusual to see block and tackle or a chain hoist to move things that are heavier than either of us would like to lift.
Yes, absolutely. We have put that to good use many times. Speaking of fallout shelters, I'll have to show you that.
Paul is taking us into a room with the traditional backup radio equipment,
yes,
with the power turned on. Yes. So you've got the makings of a complete radio station.
Yes, right? We can basically go on the air here. It's just a matter of putting in a patch cord. We've got a microphone. We've got a mixing console. We've got a cart machine, a tape, and a cassette machine, and a reel-to-reel. We've got all the media for the machines underneath.
Oh, yeah.
If you're ever listening to WLW and you hear ZZ Top come on with Sharp Dressed Man, you'll know that somebody has activated the emergency backup.
There you go. I love it. The traditional cots, and there's some...
I've slept on that cot before.
Have you?
Yes.
Now,
yes.
Do you have the 2 months' worth of food supplies in a closet somewhere that some of them...
You mean the civil defense official survival
there
biscuits?
There you go. He's got the survival biscuits.
Yes.
Look at the date.
Date packed February, March, or April of 1962.
I don't think you're going to dig into those, are you?
No. Actually, one of these cans I pulled out the other day looked a little swelled. But this
is a tin about 14 inches high, maybe 6 by 10, and it's a sealed tin, just like you get your Spam in. And he's got a box of them over there.
Yeah, it says it weighs 6 pounds, 15 packages, 26 biscuits each.
So you have biscuits. You have there's a sanitation kit, which we assume is for sanitation.
You have
everything has the Civil Defense logo on it,
yes,
and here's the drinking water.
Of course, this is where you put your drinking water. And then, of course, once you get the drinking water in, you need to have a place to get rid of it, so you've got your...
The sanitation kit.
You've got your toilet seat that goes on top of a barrel. Seat.
And so, that's got lime in the bottom, or it had probably?
It's got... There's toilet paper and all kind of stuff. You've got, you've got your iodine for water purification.
And, you know, some of us are probably not old enough to remember that this was considered a real threat back then, and there was a comfort to knowing you could bolt that door and keep going, because if the bomb ever hit in the 50s particularly,
yes,
that was really scary.
Absolutely. Of course now with watching smart bombs and all that, I'd be as far away from here as I could get.
Yeah,
thank you
exactly.
Very much. Yes,
exactly.
We are now calling ourselves a primary entry point. And we are a PEP station. We're one of 34 stations, and we operate at the behest of the White House.
Can I ask you now, were you one of the stations that was hit by the test that went awry a couple of years ago?
No, and that test was actually being done for WLS out of Chicago. WLS did not get taken over because Warren Scholes, the chief engineer, was at the site testing. So he knew that he was, you know, going to be receiving a test. So he was there, and it didn't take over that station. It did, however, take over WTAM in Cleveland. I think it might have got WWL. It got used to be QDR. I think it's 540 in Orlando.
And all the stations that are relying on them probably tripped all the way down the chain.
Yes, and actually it got as far south as Lima, Ohio. And I think the only reason it didn't make it down here because the Ohio state of Ohio is set up that something from Cleveland should have came all the way down and got us. Right. But it didn't, and I think the reason it didn't was the guy in Lima, which happened to be working behind the rack, and heard the test go off and thought he had done it, so he unplugged the unit.
Whoa.
And so
his name wasn't Fred Volbe, was it?
No, it wasn't Fred. No, it wasn't Fred. So I believe the story is he thought he'd bumped something, so he unplugged the unit to be safe. And went ahead, and that broke the chain, or it probably would have gotten down to here. If it had gotten to us, probably would have got to the state of Kentucky and the state of Indiana. And
if you're a late tuner-inner, you may not remember we talked about this with Gary Wilson about the PPAC system and about how a test was requested, and because the operator did not know there was more than one page of stations to take off the test list, pages 2, 3, and 4, or whatever it is, actually took this test, and it was on in some stations on the air for 45 minutes.
Yeah. What happened was the stations. There was a couple of stations that found out the hard way. They didn't have the equipment in place to actually reset the unit, and I think that got remedied rather quickly after that. Yes.
Okay, leaving the fallout shelters now, we can walk up and look out the windows and take a look at the towers. Now, you've got two towers. One looks to be just a standard tower, uniform cross-section, I guess it's called. It looks like it's about a quarter wave. And then, of course, there's the behemoth, which looks to be freshly painted, and that's the famous Blaw-Knox radiator that is diamond-shaped in the middle and tapered at both ends.
Yes, it's 747 feet to be exact, and it was actually shortened. It was originally 827 feet, and they found that the tower was a little long for nighttime propagation and was causing some high angle
sky wave
problems. Yes, and so it was shortened down to actually 707 feet, which means that they took the pole off the top and just dropped the pole down inside the tower and lashed it inside the tower, and so that made the tower roughly a half wave. Well, along comes the 70s and that newfangled FM, and they decided that they needed a place to hang their FM antenna on the tower out here. So they put the pole back up, but they shortened it to just 40 feet sticking out of the top of the tower. It is a little longer than it needs to be, but.
But you know what, DXers love to hear that. Yeah. There's more skywave there than you want. Our friend Watt Hairston, we both know, down at WSM, sure. Had mentioned that when Blaw-Knox put up that tower down there, they came right up the road and built this one back in the early 30s, I think it must have been.
That's correct.
Is this about the same physical size in the middle?
Physical, 40 feet, something like that in the middle. It's about the same size.
And it's square in the middle. It's
square in the middle.
Tapers up and down.
And the one difference is this one has letters on the front of it.
Right.
It has the call sign on the front of it,
and
which are about 11 feet tall. I've been up there.
Are they really?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
My word.
Yeah.
So,
I can't reach the top of them.
Are they lit at night? I haven't noticed.
They were originally neon. The neon, of course, was tremendously expensive to maintain, and I think was finally taken off in the 70s. The guy that lived here before me is named Jim Hampton. He said it finally just got to the point to where they just said
they were climbing.
So what we did was actually painted the letters in with a white paint, and then just sodium lights that shine on it. And they actually do a pretty good job of lighting the thing up.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's guide only at the middle?
Only at the middle.
How big are the guy cables?
Guy cables are just under 2 inches, inch and 11, 15 sixteenths, 13,
size, yeah. I can see the cooling pond from your office window here.
Uh-huh.
And what you said, maybe a foot of water in it is about all. And there were some pipes that go out the middle, and there's sprayers on there, I think.
Right. They used to turn up, now they're turned down. If you'll notice, the nozzles are pointed down.
Yeah.
The reason is they were losing so much water due to wind.
I wonder if there are any goldfish in that pond besides the bass you talked about.
I have put several hundred goldfish in there, and they don't last long.
Do the bass eat them, or do they just
Yes, they love them. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
That pump, or that whole water system out there is not active anymore.
No,
you can't
no.
turn it on anniversaries or anything like that. It's still fun to look at. So maybe people did go swimming in there, but they might have been under the influence.
That's probably the case. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
Now I look up, and way over our heads, looks like a shack up there in the sky. That's up there a ways.
Yeah, it's about 90 feet in the air.
What is that?
That's a guard shack. That actually was a watchtower. They had a little shack, and it had a spotlight on top, and during World War II, they had armed guards up there.
So they were worried about sabotage, I suppose, during the war, somebody coming in and shooting out the place?
Yeah, there were motion sensors on the fence.
They were real serious
about it, yeah.
Paul Jellison, thank you so much for your time. You took time off on your vacation here at Christmas week 2002.
Well, you know, I don't consider this work.
You don't? I've just been watching you here, and this is a labor of love for you.
Oh, absolutely. I've lived on this location since 1991, and it's always been just you know, quite an adventure to live here, to say the least. And it's a lot of fun, you know, it really is.
What a great thing to say, and to meet a guy who really lives his job and loves it. And to be at a place like this, which has such heritage.
Oh,
yeah. Mark Dernberger on the road with the DX Audio Service. We'll be back again next month. And until then, good listening, DXers.